it. All righty, here we go. Tom off on a Friday. There's Jacob there, but he always has the same expression on his face. If I were one of those, I'm stalling for Sherry for a second. If I were one of those, like, people that, I'm getting her in here. I need some support for this. Sherry, get in here.
Hey there.
Hey there. I was just about to say to Jacob, you know, there are riders that people put on their contracts. Big famous people put riders on their contract. Janet Jackson says there could be no lint. She wants a piece of velvet, continuous carpet that goes all the way from her dressing room to the stage. And if there's any lint found anywhere on that black velvet carpet, she turns around, goes back, and doesn't perform. I would have on a rider in my contract that Jacob needs to have a look of encouragement on his face right before the show starts. This sort of blank, I'd think of a thousand other places I'd rather be, or that blank, I'm counting my teeth with my tongue look. My contract would say Jacob must look happy and enthused, all right?
Right.
Jacob, how could I honor that contract when perhaps you're broadcasting remotely?
Hey, all the time. It has to be on all the time, wherever if I'm remote or what.
Because you can just sense it, right? You can see that. You can sense that expression. It's there, the blank expression. You know it, right?
Yeah.
The energy is not there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You want to look over the person and be like, you know, here we go. I mean, it takes a lot. This is 4 hours of entertaining news.
Could Sean and I take turns in giving you this look, maybe?
Yes, if you have to, if you need to, if you don't want to pull a muscle. All right. All sorts of polls have been taken across the country from parents. I find this absolutely fascinating that 74% of the different polls, 74% of parents, when asked, are satisfied with the education that their children are getting. Huh. And then there's just as many people are okay with the kids staying home as going back. I mean, you can kind of split hairs on that thing. So it would seem, Sherry, as you plowed through all these different studies, what are we to make of this? Do parents not want to go back, or parents do want to go back?
It's really interesting because from what you hear, you hear that the general public is saying kids should be back in school, right? And it's you know, that's what most people are saying. It's time for them to go back. And then you also hear from parents how difficult it's been for them to try to do this virtual learning. I mean, they've had to be school teachers. They've had to do all this other stuff. So you would think that the overwhelming majority of people would encourage, you know, states to make sure that they return to the classroom. That's not really the case. It seems to be pretty split. It's you know, it depends on who you ask and how you ask the question. Also, but you know, there's all kinds of, in Seattle, for instance, 37% do not want to go back to the classroom. That's in terms of teachers and things like that. If you ask for the surveys among parents, they surveyed 10,000 families. 46% opted for in-person classroom, 40% remote classroom. But if you break it down by race and you go even further into this, 56% of white people opted for in-person and 38% of people of color voted for in-person. So it really kind of depends on the survey that you're looking at, how it's asked, and who they're asking.
Okay, here's if they had the data, you could say, knowing that your child learning from home increases comprehension at a 40% lower rate than in classroom, would you choose to keep your child at home or send him to the classroom? It has to be the result of the choice that would then cause the person to say, oh, hell, I want him in class, right? If you knew this, so your choice, by having your choice to do this, your child ends up like that. Then if they had that information, they would then have, it would be easier for them to make a determination. If they're trying to raise a dumb child, they might choose the one that would allow. Now, which one is going to make my kid dumber than I am? And then, that would be this choice over here. So right now, it's just basically, would you want them in class? Because right now they're going in class, they get sick, they come home and make me sick. Well, or in class and they get a better education. The variable itself is too personally analyzed by the individual. But that doesn't stop King 5 from heading into a classroom with Jay Inslee.
You know, a rocket ship is landing on Mars today. Did you hear
Governor Jay Inslee had...
Oh, my God. Oh boy, nothing worse than going into a class. Yeah, just for a moment there, I was. Okay. I don't like the guy very much, but I was dying for him right there in the very beginning, because big tall guy, these kids looking up at him. Chris has got the mask on, and he's all awkwardly trying to relate to them. Oh, I have to take my headset off for the beginning of this.
You know, the rocket ship is landing on Mars today. Did you know
Governor that? Jay Inslee had tougher questions for the teacher of these kindergartners, Mrs. Singh.
You feel comfortable working here now?
I have a wonderful class, and we are all working together to be safe.
Similar answers upstairs in Mrs. Dyer's sixth grade class.
But this has to be better. I just have to believe that this is better.
A million percent.
Puyallup School started bringing students back on hybrid schedules in January. They'll all be able to return in 2 weeks. Sanitizer and masks are everywhere. The desks are separated, and there are fewer students in the classroom than usual. The district says some students and teachers opted to stay remote, but administrators tell the governor the majority overcame any fears.
We've taken staff and our union leaders out to schools to see it in action instead of just using words to describe what we're committed to.
More than a quarter of the state's students are back for some level of in-person instruction. But the state's teachers union maintains vaccinating teachers should be part of any district's reopening plan.
By the way, the CDC said not necessary. Does not need to be done.
I know teachers don't want it.
I guess we're not following the science. Do we trust CDC? CDC said teachers don't need to be vaccinated. Are we following the science?
I think we're going to throw grandmother under the bus here.
Governor says the most vulnerable.
Whoa. Why was he throwing grandmother under the bus? I was so busy talking about the CDC. Why is he want to throw grandmother under the bus? Is this a new program? Throw grandmother under the bus?
No, teachers don't want to think we're going to throw grandmother under the bus here.
Governor says the most vulnerable, healthcare workers and those over 65, need to remain in the priority group.
Is it time to get more creative, offer bonuses, hazard pay for teachers who are reluctant to come back without a vaccine?
Well, I think that what has proved successful is for teachers to look at other schools and talk to their colleagues. That has increased their confidence.
And what about punishing districts that don't bring students back?
Not at the moment, but the superintendent of public instruction has said that he is going to need reopening plans to be able to finance schools with additional dollars.
Okay. If you were a teacher, would you be concerned about going back to school, Sherry?
Yeah, because I've got the coronaphobia. But, you know,
that's right.
Yeah, so I probably would be. And there's a real debate in Seattle that's going on because the union wants specific language that outlines safety measures. They want contact tracing, flexible work accommodations, a remote work option for unvaccinated teachers. They want access to rapid testing every week. So they're really holding tight on this and saying, we don't want to go back until you can promise us that we're going to be safe, too. So I sort of see both sides of this.
They don't want to go back. And they're also asking for this. And we want unicorns that fly, not just the ones that walk around and eat grass. With the flying one. It's got the big stick on the front of its head. Very dangerous coming in for a landing. We want that one. Yeah, they don't want to go back. They don't want to go back. I would do this. I would do the dollar incentive. Say, okay, I tell you what. Right now, if you sign up, we'll give you $10,000 to go back. And it's on the table right now for the first, 3,000 or 2,000 teachers. And it's going to go down. It's like what we're doing at MM Comfort Systems when it comes to air conditioning. It's 20% off right now, right, Sean? But by the end of February, that's gone.
That's
I would
right.
do an incentive. Yeah. Hey, thanks, Sean. $5,000 for you right now. Go back or $2,000. Go back. Because apparently the people that work at the grocery stores are willing to risk their life for an additional $4 an hour. She'd say to the teachers, if you get, how about $30,000? Oh, here, I'll ask you, Sherry, since you've got some sort of weird mental thing about getting sick all the time.
Right.
What if I said to you, would you go back for an additional $20,000?
$20,000, I might consider it. $5,000, no way. Yes, I can be bought. Yes.
Everybody can.
I mean, 20 grand is 20 grand, right? I mean, come on.
I've seen iron lungs on sale on Craigslist for 6,000. So you're going to net out of the thing 14 once you buy the iron lung if you do get sick.
Well, when you do the math for me like that, that's pretty good. But one guy did say in a Seattle Times article, he did say, my wife is immunocompromised. I'm only 60 years old. I can't get a vaccine. So if one of the kids gets it and gives it to me, I take it home to my wife and it could be a real problem.
Yeah. All right. Everybody else,
you are unmoved by this.
No, No, I got it. Then there's a special situation, but not everybody is living in that guy's house. Racial disparities prompting calls for King County to repeal the bicycle helmet law. This is such a silly story. And it always starts with the idea that you have to begin any conversation about the law or the system as all cops are racist. It has to start that way. That's the only way to explain that they're stopping more people that are black that don't have a bicycle helmet on as opposed to white people that are riding a bike without a bicycle helmet on. Is that pretty much the story, or am I slanting it in such a way that we can't continue to talk about it, Sherry?
Well, I think that it is that is somewhat what it's saying, but it's also saying
Thank you.
There is disproportionate enforcement among black, native, and homeless riders. So a lot of people cannot afford helmets. So they're saying that that's number one, that could be considered racist. There were 1,667 helmet citations issued between 2003 and 2020. Black cyclists received helmet infractions at a rate four times that of white cyclists.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But here's another fact. Asian Pacific Islanders received infractions at rates 10 times lower than whites.
So they're discriminating against white people.
In that case, yes, I guess so. But they're looking into this, and they're going to agree to study the disparate impact of bicycle helmet enforcement. What I want to know about this, John, and I'd like to get your opinion on it, because I don't do that.
I'm straight news. Sorry.
So I totally understand that this angle to it, right? And I understand that people are upset that they feel as though there's some racial profiling going on and all of that. But what about the safety issue? If they really repeal this, isn't there something more to be said for keeping people safe and maybe organizing a way to get everybody a helmet? Is that not common sense?
No. See, racism is the worst thing in the world, and we are all racist, all white people are. And it is better to have a black guy, a white guy, a Pacific Islander, anyone, fly off a bicycle and have their head crack onto the sidewalk like a ripened melon, rather than allow racist cops to go around and give tickets. This idea that we're going to get rid of all of the helmet laws, it's not a libertarian point of view. It's one way to stop the horrible discrimination that's going on. The other city council member said the cops would all carry around bicycle helmets. I love this. And when they see somebody without a helmet, they'll ask them if they can afford it. If they can't, then they're going to open the trunk of their car and then give them a bicycle helmet. Did you see that part of it?
I didn't see that part of it. Okay, because their trunks aren't filled with anything else. They have room for all of the bicycle helmets in the world.
They don't have to put the whole... You could call up a backup cop who's got other helmets, but I could just imagine the type of helmets they are, right? It's the weird, nerdy ones that your mom's friend made you wear when you went over there for a sleepover. It sat much higher on your head than your friend's helmet, and you're like, it's way up there. Like, it's always like, how's it balancing on, like, my head has a point or something?
Right.
So this idea, here I'll just tell everybody what happens. The cop stops the guy that doesn't have the helmet on in order to have a reason to stop it. It's the same way as they stop you with a broken taillight or they stop you making a turn without a signal. It is a reason to make contact. They make contact with the individual, and then they begin to ask questions of other stuff. But they use that as a beginning mark. So as I said to Jacob in the pre-show meeting, I said, you'd need to find out how often when they have the initial stop contact, does it lead to additional information being found, like bench warrants, like stolen property, like whatever else there would be included in that thing? And then is that an effective way of policing? This is what they do. This is how it works. Now, do they stop them more often? It's like, do black guys not wear helmets as often as white guys? Do black people jaywalk more than white people? There was a study done in Florida. They said, well, why do more black people get seatbelt violations than white people? So they did a survey of, I don't know, 30,000 drivers. And it turns out 94% of white people wear a seatbelt. 86% of black people wear a seatbelt. It's like, well, there you go. Less seatbelt wearing, more seatbelt wearing, possibility of more citations being handed out. Or you could just simply just eliminate all of the studies and just assume all police officers are racist.
But isn't what you said before about them stopping someone just as an introduction to see whether or not they are in fact guilty of something else, isn't that racial profiling, and isn't that a problem?
Well, you'd have to determine whether or not it manifests itself into finding that the person's got other problems. I talked to a cop. He said, the thing is, we know most of the people that we see on the streets. We know them. We know, you can say, the same homeless people, because everybody basically lives within like a 4-block radius of wherever they're living. Even if they don't have a house, they're sort of stuck there. So the police know the guys. They'll drive down the road. They go, hey, there's that guy. There's this guy. There's this guy. Sometimes they can stop. Hey, you don't have a helmet on. I'm stopping you because you're not wearing a helmet. I want to ask you something. Did you happen to see this? Ask questions of the individual, but you have to stop them and give them a reason. I'm stopping you for this reason. Trying to investigate whatever the crime is. But again, if you just want to make it really simple, just assume, like they do in the Seattle Times, that they're stopping them disproportionately because they're biased. That's the easiest argument to make.
And the number of citations that were issued in 2019, because this is a huge problem, 29. Yes. 29.
So that's like one. That's two a month?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. 2.5 a month, fact, yeah. Well, February's got less days, so.
Two point three four.
Thank you for that. Who says doing math on the radio doesn't work?
Oh no, that's it. It doesn't work for me, no matter where I'm doing it.
All right, is it Tracy Taylor? What happened to you yesterday, Taylor? What happened to you yesterday?
I took a day off.
All righty, Keel Mortgage, 1-888-770-KIEL. That's Keel Mortgage. Why not give them a call? Call that number, and again, Sean and I planning a field trip heading to your house. We will dial the number for you, and then we'll stand there and watch you smile when everybody there at Keel Mortgage tells you how much money you save because mortgage rates are historically low.
My fingers are ready to push those buttons or dial those rotaries, baby.
We need uniforms. We have to have costumes, Jacobs. We just can't just show up in our street clothes. We want to have costumes.
I'll have my bedtime clothes on. Street clothes. Come on, I'm not going to wear those, right, John?
I don't want you there. I'm talking like capes and things. Capes and masks.
Oh, you don't know my bedroom clothes, baby.
Okay, Sean. Some people are eating. Some people have eaten. Some people would like to eat again. They don't want to think about you showing up at somebody's house with your bedroom. It's easy, even the way you say it. Sherry, as a woman, you're offended. It does things to your girl parts, right?
It's kind of cute, actually. I like it. Bedtime
clothes. All right,
clothes.
Don't encourage
Not pajamas, but bedtime clothes.
There you go, baby.
I don't know what that is. It's whatever he passes out in. All right. By the way, Sherry's sitting in for Tom tomorrow. Or you know what? I'm going to get a couple of more fun facts from Sherry, and I will introduce you again at the 3:47 with more fun facts about you. But in the meantime, the fact that Southern Living, I don't know why, they've decided to retract an essay that drew the ire of meteorologists. You don't want a lot of meteorologists, guys that occasionally wear bow ties because they don't have personalities, coming after you. But this is what's happened now that... What made the meteorologists upset from this Southern Living magazine?
So the Southern Living article was titled "Flowers in the Storm," and it says there was no warning, no sirens, no weather alerts, and it was talking about this Birmingham, Alabama, or this Alabama tornado that carved a 9.5-mile path through central Alabama. It killed people. It was a problem, and so it was. It was saying that there was nobody saying, a TV meteorologist was not saying, you need to get to a safe place now. Well, when this guy, James Spann, who's a chief meteorologist in Birmingham, saw this, he said, the narrative discredits the entire weather enterprise. And this article goes on to say that, you know, weathermen and weather people, rather, meteorologists are really taking the heat now more than ever. That for some reason that people have just unleashed all this stuff at weather people because they can do it on Twitter. It used to be that, and probably you can relate to this, John, that you'd have to get a voicemail or somebody would have to type you a letter. Well, now they can just tweet out something mean about you and you know, it goes out and everybody sees it. So what's your experience?
I just get to the guy on Fox 45. I remember this weatherman. He made news. Jamie Simpson snapping at people complaining that he interrupted the Bachelor. And he's trying to explain it. I'm trying to save your life.
Well, this heavy rain is between you and the tornado. That's why this is a dangerous situation tonight. It's dark. It's also rainy. I was just checking social media. We have viewers complaining already. Just go back to the show. No, we're not going back to the show, folks. This is a dangerous situation, okay? It's nice, right? Think about this. This was your neighborhood. I'm sick and tired of people complaining about this. Our job here is to keep people safe, and that is what we're going to do. Some of you complain that this is all about my ego. Stop. Okay, just stop right now. It's not. I'm done with you people. I really am. This is pathetic.
If I have to, I will turn this broadcast around. It sounds like the angry dad.
So I
swear to you, one more time. I mean, to turn this, I'm done with you people.
Dangerous situation here. All right, I'm sorry I did that. It just really bothers me that we have people that don't care about other people's safety around here. That's just ridiculous. New tornado warning here. Oh, that's the same one we had. That's headed towards central and southern Mercer County.
Yeah, he had nothing new at that point. People are upset because sometimes what's happening now is the broadcast range and the forecast range is beyond. They look on the map and they go, that's nowhere near us. We want to go back to see if she sleeps with them right after they get out of the hot tub or do they shower first. Let's get back to the Bachelorette. So you look on the map and there's the big black box, scary box hanging over one thing. So you're like, well, that's not me. Go back. And it's enough to upset Jamie Simpson. He just can't stand it. He can't believe that they don't care about other people's lives. I was the weatherman in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, which is also known as Tornado Alley. I've told this story one other time. I need a papal dispensation to repeat the story. I'm sitting in there. I didn't pay much attention to weather. I would take my forecast from the USA Today page, which was fun. It was purple, and it normally had cartoons. And then I would, like, draw the snowman with the scarf going straight out and then put the temperatures on that because that just happened to be the exact same thing that was on the USA Today. And when I realized, oh, I could actually put that down on the computer and then scroll over it, it would allow me to make my own drawing. That's the kind of work I was doing in Tornado Alley. A very dangerous thing, right?
You are a scientist.
I'd be like Don Knotts from a 60s movie, like at Disneyland. So here, this is what happened one day. I'm in there, and all of a sudden, Dave Shaw, the news director, runs in. He always wore tweed, even in the winter, the man had great character.
Itchy.
And he runs in. Look at there's a storm coming. There's a storm coming. And I'm too busy sketching out a pumpkin face off of USA Today. Look at the barometer, he yells. And I look up. I didn't know there was the barometer. I thought it was a badly functioning clock. And it was dropping precipitously, which is a bad sign. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I'm looking up at the screen trying to think which one is the barometer. He goes, we're all heading down into the bomb shelter. Just read everything on the teleprompter. National Weather Service is issuing a tornado warning. Just take care of it on the teleprompter. So they all run downstairs to the basement of WCIA. And I'm there sitting at the desk. And the worst thing you can say to a dyslexic person is just read the teleprompter. So I'm sitting there. I've never read a teleprompter before. Just me and this other guy who's running the teleprompter. He's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And all of a sudden, they interrupt One Life to Live or whatever the show was. And beep, this is not a test. I was like, wow, the first time it's not a test. Next thing I know, it's me. I'm looking on the screen. I can see myself. And I know the words because I got those down because that's my name. And that's where I work. I see that on my paycheck every 2 weeks, so I'm good with that. I'm John Curley in the WCIA Weather Center. The National Weather Service is forecasting a tornado for the following counties. Now, this is where the Native Americans get back to us and get back at us for selling them, you know, them dumping us Manhattan for some glass beads. They have named some of those counties, and I'm saying this right now, in Illinois, to make it difficult to pronounce these names. Now, nothing makes you seem more like somebody who's out of town than someone who's stumbling over names. Like if you were here, Sherry, and you mess up Puyallup or something else, immediately, well, that person's not local. So it comes up, right. John Curley, WCI Weather Center, National Weather Service, issued for tornado in the following counties. Now they're coming up. I'm making those noises, and I'm like, God.
Havada, havada, havada.
I'm doing the, God, please, save us thus from thee upon this scourge, this thou. You do a lot of that. God, when you put TH in front of you, God listens. And I'm like, save me. And all of a sudden, God said, act like your battery of your phone. Faster, God. Act like the battery of your phone, of your microphone is not working. So I went, in the following counties. And then I would see a county that I could recognize. I go, Clark County. Normal. And I'm making, and it looked to the people at home like, oh, the microphone or something's wrong with the audio or the right. wind is so bad. Well, the only two people that knew I was doing this, three, God, who gave me the idea, me,
yeah.
and the guy behind the camera. Because the guy behind the camera realizes, wait a minute, there's just no words. There's no sound coming out. He looks like he's trying to say a word, but now he's just moving his lips and there's no sound. Finished.
Great.
And I tried at one point, I had to yell out. At one point, I just thought, I'd give some people, I'd throw some people a bone. And I'd get interior wall or bathtub, because that's all I thought could think. Save yourself, because I can't help you.
And nobody thought you might be having like a medical emergency or something because
no,
you were
because it
sputtering.
Looked like I would just move my lips. I would just yeah. move my lips and no sound would come out. And just the guy that was running the camera is like, how come I can't? What, have I gone deaf? How come I can't hear? I don't know how many people lost their lives, but the important thing was is I kept my job.
There you go. Priorities. Perspective.
You know what? They're in heaven. They're in heaven.
Yeah, they had a good life. Had a good long
interior
run.
Interior wall or bathtub. I tried to save them.
You did?
Is that our county? Is he talking about? Is that our county? It sounds like if our county's pronounced, and that's our county.
That's right.
I'm going to remember that if I have to pronounce something from Seattle that I don't understand.
All right, Tracy Taylor, who apparently took the day off to work on a big project. I guess it's a sculpture of me. I'm just a
student. It is. Didn't you know I'm doing it out of butter?
Oh, wow.
Wow. Wow, all right.
It's going to be...
All right, welcome back, everybody. Tom's taking the day off. Sherry calls in and joins us from her lovely home there in Old Town Alexandria, not far from where Georgetown, where the house that they shot The Exorcist in is a home. I think it's owned by Georgetown University, and you can tour that sometimes, and that's a popular spot. But when it comes to houses that are for sale or houses that you can tour that are famous spots where movies were shot, there's one in particular that went on the market and has been sold. Sherry, did you see this?
Yeah, it sold for $290,000. And this guy named Chris Rowan, who is a theatrical art director in New York, bought it. And he is going to turn it into something kind of fancy.
Here's the realtor's offering a tour of the home. Now, hold on. Hang on. Darn it all. Darn it. I'm like,
this home was Buffalo Bills in the filming of Silence of the Lambs.
So we're going to take you inside to show you some of the cool rooms that were in the movie. Come on in.
So this is the foyer where one of the major scenes was shot in the movie.
We really love how it still has a lot of the original features, like all the trim and the hardwood floors that you see throughout the home.
So the kitchen is another room that was filmed in the movie, and it takes us right over here to the basement.
And everyone always asks, is there really the hole in the basement? You're going to have to come down and see, and we will show you.
Although there's not a well in the basement, that part of the film was actually filmed on a soundstage.
But we are in the cold cellar, which was in the movie, and it actually is kind of creepy in here.
Yeah. The guy that bought it, is he going to have people come in there and take tours and stay there? It's a B&B, right?
Yeah, he's going to make it into a bed and breakfast. Right now, he's got to do a little renovation. He's going to keep all the wallpaper, all the regular stuff in there, but it only has one bathroom, which doesn't make for a great bed and breakfast experience, if you ask me. And he'll probably have to update the kitchen. But he's thinking about putting the hole back in the basement so you can have the full experience. I mean, who's going to go? And there's no RV in the back. Who's going to do this? You know, this is like, to me, this is the same thing as people that want to spend the night in a prison, in an old prison. Why? Gross. What is wrong with you?
Let's just stay focused on this.
All right.
You like the movie. You love a lot of the movie. You're really into people that make clothing or make second skins out of human flesh. You're really into that.
Okay.
You know that group. And if you can capture that large portion of the population, you got yourself a gold.
It rubs lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told.
Mister, my family will pay cash. Whatever ransom you're asking for, they'll pay it.
It rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again.
Yes, you will, precious. You will get the hose.
I mean, aren't bed and breakfasts supposed to be kind of romantic? Like, oh, look, honey, there's the hole where he, you know, gross.
The love between that man and Precious the dog.
All right, I'll give him that.
Okay.
Yes. He was a humane
the
guy.
The new owner is going to dig a giant hole in the basement of the house in order to create the well scene so people can go down there and then do those lines again, right?
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
I'll set Sean up. Sean loves to do it. Here it is again, Sean, so you can set up on
it. It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told.
Weird.
Sean?
Yeah, here we go.
It rubs the lotion on the skin, or else it gets the hose again.
Sean gave a class, he did a Discover You class, on how to talk like Buffalo Bill. How was it again, Sean? What did you tell everybody to do?
Well, I said just pretend that you're wearing someone else's skin and that you have a frog in your throat.
Uh-huh. And then?
And then just expel those lines with grace and fortitude.
But you also said put your tongue on top of your mouth or something? That was the other part of it?
Yeah, that's the other part of it. You know, he's got so many great lines. It's just that he's a great villain.
Mister, my family will pay cash. Whatever ransom you're asking for, they'll pay it.
It rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again.
Yes, you will, precious. You will get the hose.
The owner of this bed and breakfast is going to be so sick of hearing people say that, right?
Look, I know.
This is the line that I do best, though, from the movie.
All right.
And me and Rachel love this.
Wait, was she a great big fat person?
Wait, what?
Was she a great big fat person?
The greatest line, movie history.
Was she a great big fat person?
Thank you.
You sound a little bit like Larry Flint.
Okay, all right, everybody.